Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. This fifth verse. Yannamani chagrihananti. Hold on a second. Let me stick my nose right in it. I can't see from this far away. Yannamani chagrihanati. Loko Britye Kritagasi. So Sadhu Vadas Tatkirtim. Hanti Trachami Vamayaha. Yannamani Chagrihnati. Loko Britye Kritagasi. So sadhu vadas tat kirtim hanti twachami vamayaha yat of whom namani the names cha and grihnati take lokaha people in general vritye when a servant krita agasi has committed something wrong saha that asadhu vadaha blame tat of that person kirtim the reputation hanti destroys twacham the skin eva as amayaha leprosy. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. A wrong act committed by a servant leads people in general to blame his master, just as a spot of white leprosy on any part of the body pollutes all the skin. Purport. A Vaishnava, therefore, should be fully qualified. As stated in the Bhagavatam, anyone who becomes a Vaishnava has developed all the good qualities of the demigods. There are 26 qualifications mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. A devotee should always see that his Vaishnava qualities increase with the advancement of his Krishna consciousness. A devotee should be blameless because any offense by the devotee is a scar on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The devotee's duty is to be always conscious in his dealings with others, especially with another devotee of the Lord. Lord Chaitanya was Atyadaurya. He was most extremely compassionate, lenient, you can say. But Ativimardayada Parama, he was also, this is Pramodana Sarasati saying this, he was also very fussy about his followers behaving properly. He even for showed his own example that he wanted to behave properly as a sannyasi. He's God. He doesn't have to follow any rules. He can do anything as he wants. But when Jagannatha Ananda, out of love, tried to make some comfort for him, which one came first, the oil or the bed? I guess the bed. Yeah, Jagannatha Ananda, Lord Chaitanya is sleeping in a small room. There was no window in the Gambhir, right? And he's sleeping on the floor. So Jagannatha tried to make a bed that Lord Chaitanya might accept. He made it out of leaves or something? But a mattress stuffed with leaves. Yeah, something, nothing fancy. Lord Chaitanya refused it. He said, people are going to think I'm a materialist, the kind of sannyasi that has prostitutes hanging around him. Nari sannyasi. So I'm not going to accept this. Forget it. Jagarnanda was not happy about that. Because he's incarnation of Satyabhama, he has a tendency to be temperamental. So anyway, he went away. But then later he wanted to do something nice. Okay, I'll make some sandalwood oil for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And with his own hands, he ground the sandalwood. Well, I don't know how you make oil out of sandalwood. Anyway, he prepared the sandalwood oil. I guess you have to distill it. I mean, that's not a simple thing. You have to burn the wood and distill it or something like that. Yeah. Anyway, he did. He's by himself, and he distilled a large quantity of pure sandalwood oil, big mutka of oil, and presented it to Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya just, again, even more heavily refused. If I go around smelling sweetly or with sandalwood oil, everyone will think I'm a total materialist. Any taint, it's like a white cloth. If it has a spot on it, everyone can see it. So if a sannyasi has any irregularity in his behavior, everyone's going to complain about it. So I have to maintain the standards. I won't accept this, fancy oil. Jagannatha was furious. He said nothing. He just went upstairs to his own room and threw the big pot of sandalwood oil out the window into the courtyard. And he began fasting for 3 days. Was it Jagannatha? Yeah. Anyway, Lord Chaitanya finally had to, calm his anger. He managed after 3 days to get Jagannatha to cook for him and then accept the remnants. But Lord Chaitanya was making the point that a devotee has to be exemplary in his behavior because he's representing Krishna. He's representing the parampara, and the parampara is representing Krishna. That's what it's about. It's a corporation. When you join a corporation, you're working for the company, and when you're working on your official capacity, when you're on duty, whatever you do will represent the corporation. In Japan, the whole staff has to come on the roof and salute the company flag in the morning. Yeah, we have our flag here. go through actually sing the company anthem and do calisthenics together. Allegiance to the company. So we have to have our allegiance to our company, the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. We're representing the company, and we're on duty all the time. Unless we, dress up and sneak out, to the city to pretend we're not devotees and do something else. But as long as we're not doing something like that, we're on duty all the time. And it means we have to, if we don't behave properly, it looks bad for a guru, it looks bad for the sampradaya. Unfortunately, that happens quite often. Not all disciples are good disciples or strong disciples, and therefore bad reputation for the gurus and for the sampradaya come about because of the foolishness of the disciples. But anyway, Krishna is trying to make the point, Narayan is trying to make the point here, that he's applying the principle to himself that I'm going to have to approve of your curse. My servants did this, and the servant is representing the master, so therefore he can't be allowed without punishment to act like this. But it also works the other way. When you're in charge of something, you're responsible. It's not a mature management that when things are not successful, to blame all the people under you and not take the responsibility yourself. The manager has to accept that he's the responsible person, and that if things go wrong, it's his fault, even though other people made mistakes. Anyway, that's Narayan. He's the manager, supreme manager. Something went wrong in Vaikuntha. Respectable guests got cursed. And he's taking blame on himself. He's a mature manager. Not blaming his servants, but he's saying, well, what they did is really my fault. If they did something wrong, then it's my fault. That's the proper way to manage things. We're very fortunate we have Lord Narayan as our manager. Hare Krishna. Okay, I'm going to have to stop and get ready to go.
Scars.
What?
Scars.
Scars?
What kind of person?
It's a scar?
Something like that.
Let me see, a blemish maybe. In the purport?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's translation. A wrong act committed by a servant leads people in general to blame his master, just as a spot of white leprosy.
No, it's a scar. I'm not talking about leprosy.
Oh, yeah. A devotee should be blameless because any offense by the devotee is a scar on the Supreme Personality of God. So. Hare Krishna. Yes, sir.
Another day you remember that story about those two brahmanas and Maharaj Mriga?
Uh-huh.
Yes.
So, in that story, just if you look from outside, those two brahmanas were quite, how to say, vicious, or how to say, they're just usually brahmanas.
Unreasonable.
Yeah, I mean, usually like in the story of Brahmana Sudama, it says Brahmanas are peaceful, just they're satisfied with their crimes. They just, this one cow.
But it wasn't even greedy. If they were greedy, they would have been glad to get 100,000 cows in exchange, but they wouldn't accept that.
Yeah.
Okay. They had to have that cow.
Yeah, when
you know, it's just childishness.
Okay.
They just, you know, wanted to prove that they were dissatisfied and make a fuss over it.
Yeah, but he also had to turn into a lizard because of something else, I guess. Because
what was the other?
He turned into a lizard, I guess, no? Because no one
did. Yeah, I don't know his past history before that.
Yeah. No, but it doesn't happen out of the blue. Stupid Brahmins don't come and he's calling over one cow.
It's a very peculiar thing to happen.
But Krishna also, you know, like at the end you said, he said to his sons, another thing about taking the property of a brahmana.
Yeah.
So he it still looks like if he is born in a brahmana family, he's a brahmana. It doesn't matter what kind of qualities he has.
Yes.
He is so.
Well, that means you have to avoid insulting or displeasing him, and you shouldn't touch his property. Because the king may be tempted. He can take everybody else's property. He can seize other people's property if he's displeased with them. But don't do that to Brahmins. But it doesn't mean that you have to obey or take seriously what they say if they're talking nonsense. Or actually trust them if they're untrustworthy. But you have to, you know, externally show them respect, or at least avoid displeasing and offending them. And anyway, Brahmin's property is, you know, as a general rule, off limits. Although Krishna, in the end of the seventh chapter of the first canto, when Ashwatthama was punished by taking away the jewel on his head, cutting off his hair, and then kicking him out, that said, Vapanam Dharma, and this is like a quote from the Dharma Shastra, Vapanam. Yeah, but this is when a Brahma Bandhu commits murder.
Okay.
Yeah, punish, then you can take his property for a crime that otherwise other people would have to be killed for. This is Vada. Vada is execute capital punishment. So the equivalent of capital punishment for a Brahma Bandhu includes taking away his property. Only then the government can take his property.
What about Brahman?
Can confiscate his property if he's committed a crime that's a capital offense. Yes?
What about Brahman? Are they not subject to capital punishment?
Well, I don't know. This says Brahman Bandhu, which would mean a not fully properly qualified Brahman. Vapanam Dravana Dan, but if not Brahmana commits murder, he's automatically not qualified anymore. Vapanam Dravana Danam Stanam Niyapanam Tata Eshahi Brahma Bandunam Vado Nanyosti Dahika. This is how you execute capital punishment on a Brahma Bandhu. You give him a haircut, take away his wealth, and exile him. Or niyapanam is like, you know, disrespectful, being kicked out in a disrespectful way. Like pushing an animal out. This is those three things. Nanyosti, there's no physical killing of the body allowed for even the fallen member of a Brahmin family.
Dronacharya was a Brahmin or a Kshatriya?
Who?
Dronacharya
was a Brahmana, definitely. He was the son of a sage. Okay. He was from Rishi stock.
Yeah. So Brahmanas also take part in the wars. I mean,
no, very abnormal. This is things that were happening at the end of Dwarpa Yuga. Motive passion was too prominent, and unusual things were happening. Drona was not born normally. He was born, his father's semen fell in a pot. You know, he was born from the pot. That's why he's called Dronacharya. All sorts of unusual things were happening. You know, describing the Adiparva, how these various persons took birth. Unusual. First of all, these are demons and demigods coming down to earth, taking unusual means of taking birth.
For
the Leela of the Kurukshetra war. Demigods and the demons fought a war on the earth, in disguise, at Kurukshetra. Anyway, Drona took birth on, you know, to participate on the side of the demons. So he also, although he was a rishi by birth, his family is a rishi family, he was attracted to military science. He went and studied with, who was his name? Ashwa something. Some great... No, not with a Brahmin, with military, and also with Parashuram. He got the weapons of Parashuram. He went to Parashuram to get his weapons, but he was too late. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got, what did he get? Oh, I don't remember the whole story, but anyway. Yeah, but he had this inclination to military science, even though he was a Brahmin.
And in general, military science is taught by, let's say, by Kshatriyas to Kshatriyas or something?
No, it should be taught by Brahmanas. The Dhanurveda is a sophisticated science. It's best taught by Brahmanas, but they don't go out in the war and kill people. Or Kshatriyas may teach it, but better is the Brahmins do the teaching. Even the arts and sciences for the other classes. But, you know, the saying is those who can do, and those who can't teach. Yeah, so the Brahmins can't actually go out and fight, but they can teach it.
Like Dhanurveda, I remember one of the 64 arts I was doing the other day. I would eat confidential portion of mantras and applying them. So basically the art of fighting and mantras is a secret part which is only Brahmanas.
Yeah, I mean the Brahmins have to teach the mantras. But I was curious. Every time someone throws a weapon, he's got to do Achaman.
Yeah.
What do? They carry ashram cups with them on the battlefield?
No, they have the pots. They like commandals.
They carry commandals on the battlefield? I was wondering, I was just curious, how do they touch water in the middle of the battle?
Before they pronounce mantra, I mean, without mantra, they should not always pronounce mantras. Mantras are
called. No, but for the astras, for mantra propelled weapons, you need to do Achaman and then chant the mantra.
Maybe you cannot use those weapons on every fancy corner.
Well, you can use them, but you have to use them. You have to go through the whole procedure to use them. They're not, yeah. Anyway, these are Divya weapons anyway. They're not normally used by human beings.
Mm-hmm.
What was Arjuna told when he got those weapons? That they shouldn't be used on ordinary human beings?
Oh, yeah.
Is that right?
Why don't they let the Sandasura? Yes, something like that. He'll hear a reaction if you do that. Equal.
Okay. So the person that those weapons were used against were actually superhuman beings in disguise. Hare Krishna. Okay, Hare Krishna. All glory, Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai.